Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. I'm Jonty Ralph-Smith, one of your co-hosts here with Nathan Seppi. As always, lots to unpack this week. We've just had the mid-season draft. We're right in the midst of the national championships. And in among all of that, we've had a weekend of CTL footy in the boys and the girls space. We will start with the CTL, with the mid-season draft. However, that happened last Wednesday. And yeah, there were some CTL players who were picked up. I'm going to ask you a question though, firstly, before we do speak about those players who were picked up and some that were unlucky to get overlooked. I know you have strong views around what should happen to the 19-year-olds who were overlooked. So I'll let you voice those and then I guess I'll start a debate and we'll have a little bit of a chat about it. But for the boys that have missed the draft and are CTL listed, your thoughts?
My thoughts... kindly time to go. But I don't mean that in a bad way that these players aren't talented. At the end of the day, it's an under 18 competition. If you're not picked up with your second opportunity, and the second opportunity of hopefully many for these boys, that's not the end. But
yeah, important to stress as well.
Yeah, I just think, look, if you weren't getting picked up playing at under 18 level, then you'd just got to apply your trade at VFL. That's my honest thoughts. It's an under 18 competition. You want those boys who are in their draft year to have the best chance. And whether that makes a team weaker or not because a 19-year-old's not there or not, I don't think that should matter. At the end of the day, it is not a results-based competition.
No, it's
not. Yep. So that's my general thoughts. Then you're the opposite.
In essence. Yeah, I suppose I am. So I guess the question I would ask is someone like an Illaro Smith. So we know Illaro Smith got picked up and congratulations to him. Collingwood pouncing on him and yeah, he'll be a prospect for them to watch for many years, we hope. But he missed all of his 18s year with an injury. Why should he be disadvantaged by not getting the opportunity to have an opportunity that was essentially taken away from him for something out of his control last year?
It's not the only football he's ever played in his life. Although I understand this is his most crucial part. If he had played absolutely no football for the last 2 years, sure, you've got a case, but someone like Illaro, you could definitely argue he should be playing VFL football for his size, that you want to see him against the bigger bodies. I know that's
Is he really going to – that was my next question. So for these players who are unlikely to actually get VFL minutes because of – things like their size, they're not as developed yet and that sort of thing, then they end up back at local and then they can end up lost in the wash and, you know, it might take them a couple of years to work their way into a VFL lineup even if they are on a VFL list. So do you want those players playing local for the rest of the year, which is something that could happen even if they are VFL listed? You look at someone like Ben Hopkins, who's been very good for Dandenong, hasn't been able to crack into the North Melbourne lineup. He'd be back playing for Lang Warren if he wasn't playing for Dandenong. Is that something you want to risk happening?
Well, I think that's just the journey at the end of the day. Whether that's good or bad, I just think once you get to this point in your career, you just have to do what's the next best thing. And I just think you got to open up that space at under 18 level.
And then my next point and my final point is probably, with due respect, the player who Ben Hopkins or Jordan Doherty, I'm looking at a Dandenong perspective for no particular reason, is taking at the moment, he's taking a spot of someone who is, if he's not in Dandenong's best 23 with Doherty, with Hopkins there, how draftable really is he at this point? He might be a bottom ager that you're bringing in, but you should always prioritise the top ages and the players in their draft year and players who are eligible, whether that be as an 18-year-old and a 19-year-old. So if you're not getting games with those players in and you're the last man selected, how draftable are you really at this point in your journey? Whose spot are you really taking away? Are you really taking away someone that's really going to press his case straight away?
Probably not, and that's where you probably get me on that, but... the last argument before we probably need to move on is, well, you've still got bottom age boys that would probably love a crack already, games under their belt. But let's move forward. A lot to talk about. Yeah. Mid-season draft, did happen last week. Run through the 6-5 players who got picked up by an AFL club, which is terrific. Geordie Payne obviously went at number one and got picked up to North Melbourne. Will McLaughlin went to the Lions. Illaro Smith went to the Pies. Tom Hanley to the Swans and Cooper Lord to the Blues. So... congratulations to all five. The quick question, who plays first out of those five?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good question. a question without notice. So I think Illawarra obviously is going to take some time to develop, yep. So it wouldn't be him. I honestly think Jordy Payne. I think Jordy Payne went at pick one and a really good story of perseverance, obviously getting overlooked last year, had the right attitude, came back and was able to show his versatility. So touch on that story. But, yeah, my answer would be Jordy Payne. And the team he's gone to as well. There's going to be plenty of opportunities for him. They're looking to promote their youth, clearly, North Melbourne.
Yeah, well, position North are in, you'd probably assume the Illawarra, Tom, Cooper, even Will. I mean, those are all four teams that have pretty
handy lineups.
Top class talent at the top end. So interesting.
Just want to touch on as well, Cooper Lord, obviously Carlton, and he's someone who I guess rounds out what was a really strong class for the Sandy Dragons last year of players drafted, but probably arguably the greatest success story under Rob Harding, I think from the same club that Rob Harding's had some association with, got him in pre-season based on a hunch, based on the fact he knew a little bit about his work ethic and what he'd shown. And yeah, I think he proved Rob right in the end with his ability to run both ways and do what he does in the midfield, because not only did he show it at under 18s level, but then he was able to prove perhaps some critics wrong by then going and doing it in the North Melbourne midfield straight away.
Yeah, well, he's a love a defender, a defensive midfielder at that as well. He'll be a good addition to the Blues. Not sure where he fits in straight away, but obviously over time, love to see how he develops. But move now to the Allies and WA. That was the second game of the National Championships. This is for the boys. That took place on Sunday afternoon. It wasn't the prettiest of matches, and Sydney had a lot of rain on the Saturday, and The pitch held up pretty well at Blacktown on the Sunday, to be fair.
It was positive.
A bit slippery, but looked okay from what I saw. And the Allies got up 10-10-70 to WA 77-8-50 and Western Australia led by 5 points at three-quarter time. So it was a big fourth-quarter effort from the Allies, and they get their first win of the champs.
Yeah, which is really positive. You obviously watched this one again, and you've watched the Allies now for a couple of weeks. So they started their championships obviously a little bit earlier than the other teams. They're already halfway through their championships now, and Leo Lombard, from what you tell me, has backed up what he did in the first week. So, yeah, Gold Coast supporters are going to be licking their lips. What was it this week that took your eye?
Yeah, well, it was nuts.
It was nuts.
Well, I had Sam...
You should put that on an Instagram. Yeah, well,
it was nuts. Seriously, there was one goal. If anyone's watching, it was in the second half where just one of those highlight reels that you'd look back on in 10 years and you'd say, well, he always had it, where he just taps it over an opponent. Just one of those kind of basketball taps
smarts,
over, keeps on running, runs into inside 50, kicks it from 30. And I had Sam Marshall as my number one on the ground. And at that point before that goal, it was purely because, I mean, Lombard is terrific. He brings that separation in his game with that strength he has. He's so effective around the ground. He just drives his legs on the inside and outside, and quick hands, strength with his marking, but he does overdo it sometimes when his confidence gets up, and that was something last week. But that's when you've got that confidence, fair enough. You probably do have the license to take on the game more than a couple of times, but that goal just topped it off. When you talk about impact per possession, he's got it, and you can live with those mistakes because he's just so powerful.
Those mistakes would be outweighed by, like you say, all the other
for sure.
offensive flair that he produces.
Yeah, got forward and kicked two goals in the end in just a really terrific performance, and just stoppage craft. He should play round one next year for the Suns.
You touch on Sam Marshall there as well, someone who'll go to the Lions, you'd think, if he keeps up his current trajectory, and he certainly did that on the weekend.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just some real smart football players, I thought. Really good ball movement, moving inside 50, set up a shot on goal early in the contest that wasn't able to be converted in the end. It was just his aggression to take it on. Really wasn't scared of penetrating through the corridor and using his legs to create some drive. In terms of meters gained, he probably would have been up there with, you know, the top five on the field in the end. He was always willing to create opportunities offensively, which I thought was good on his end. Had a really nice set shot at goal, so he finished with one goal for the day. And his ability to lower the eyes inside 50, I think he added that little bit of class that the Allies needed, especially in the second half when they were really 50-50 which way the game would go. So he was my second best on the day.
A couple of classy smalls as well caught your eye, and you were telling me about them in Ollie DePauli, Qbank from the Tassie Devils, and Zeke Ulland, another product of Gold Coast, who also started the championships reasonably well, just like Leo Lombard.
Yeah, for sure. I'll start with Ollie, and had a slow start. I don't think he had a touch at quarter time, but worked himself into it well enough where it wasn't as good as his previous game against SA, but was really well positioned moving inside 50, got a really nice goal from 40 metres out, and that's 2 weeks in a row where he's kicked a really nice goal, kicked two last week and one tad this week, but provided that speed and burst out of stoppages that the Allies really needed, got it moving forward, and I think he executed his role really well, and that's what helped him stand out when he was having a quieter day than usual on his end. And yeah, against some pretty big WA bodies as well. He was just agile and able to get himself out of some sticky situations at times. And Zeke Ulland, yeah, two really good games. A lovely left foot kick, and he did that again. He showcased that again. His ability to move through the corridor and lace out someone inside 50 was terrific. Finished with a goal on the day. One thing I noticed is just, you know, a lot of players have quick hands, right, and ability to just get out quickly. But he was running in opposite directions and flicking it back, and these passes were, you know, getting the players moving, like just stuff like that, little things where he's able to size up how to move his body well enough to keep the ball moving in a good direction. And yeah, took the game on late as well, moved it into the middle when there was, you know, those 50-50 opportunities. Yep. And yeah, like the way he went about it, he's a really talented prospect, but he's next year.
Yep. Yes, certainly. I touch on Ollie DePauli, Qbank. Nathaniel Sulzberger is a fellow Tasmanian, obviously boarding up at Melbourne Grammar and playing for the Sandy Dragons. He's another one that went okay last week and has backed it up.
Yeah, well, he's got the tough task of being kind of that second string to Leo Lombard in the middle. They're both really tough and contested players, but he was that when I compare him to Lombard, just did the little things well where if he was that second handball, he'd always make sure to get it out quickly and ease the congestion in the center stoppages, was really poised moving inside 50 with his kicking. And yeah, he was just, I thought his transition work was really good. He cleaned up a few mistakes from his teammates where they'd been moving in transition. He'd get a handball that was a bit dodged, but still was able to clean it up, was composed and just kept the ball moving well. So a quieter game than the SA game, but it was still really productive, and like just every touch was impactful, I thought, and that's all you've got to do sometimes in these big games.
And just quickly, very quickly on a few other Talent League boys who are in action for the Allies, Job Shanahan, who started nicely last week, a little bit quieter, I think, this week. Josh Murphy was well contained, and Lenny Douglas, just quickly on those three boys' games.
Yeah, I'll touch on Job and Josh, but Job was pretty good. I thought he wasn't rewarded for the effort he was putting in, just wasn't in the right spots really. Like, and that was it. He got himself into decent positions, took a really good mark early in the game, and it felt like he was slowly going to get himself working into it. Good body work. He was doing all the things I think he should have done positionally, just kind of wasn't falling his way a lot of the time, but had a really good shot out of the ruck that went through for a goal, but it was touched, which couldn't really tell on the stream, but we'll take their word for it. But a big moment in the last quarter, gets a really nice kick from Josh Murphy, who I'll touch on in a second, but nailed a big set shot. And it was just, that's a little thing, just a set shot goal, but it was to win the game pretty much in the sense that it was, I think, only 7 points at that time. And yeah, like, that's a big moment, and he executed it really well, finished with two goals. And yeah, Josh Murphy, it was a very slow day for him. He wasn't getting the service he usually was. His leads weren't really producing anything, and he was shut down by a great WA defender that I'll touch on. But look, he did put his head down at times, and I didn't think that was the best way to go about it, because you know he only needs like just a split second to produce a really good moment.
Yep.
And he did it late, and that's all he needs to do sometimes. Was really composed, did it on either side of the 50, the exact same move where the ball would come over the top. He'd work around his opponent, size up inside 50, look into the middle and find a teammate who both kicked goals in the end, and they were the winning goals. So whilst he was only able to kick one himself, I thought those little things just add that extra element that he's got that composure late in games that he doesn't need to hit the scoreboard.
Yeah. You touched on Josh Murphy, obviously, he was shut down by Cody Curtin, a good segue into WA. A bottom major, the brother of Dan Curtin, we know how highly rated he was last year, and there's another one coming through the pipeline.
Yeah, well, Cody was terrific. His vision out of D50 in transition was so poised and always found ways to get the ball moving. It was quite a scrappy affair, in all honesty. There was not a lot of time during the game where it was clean ball movement. So yep. That poise that he had was terrific. Yeah, he did keep Josh Murphy quiet for the most part, and it was the physicality he had. His hands were strong coming into D50, took some big marks, and yeah, really liked the way he went about it. And that was my first time watching him, so I don't have a lot to take from previous games. But yeah, you like the looks of a big defender like him, and if he's anything like his brother, he'll be a really handy prospect to watch for the rest of these champs and obviously into next year as well.
If you like big defenders, stay tuned for the Coates League review, a couple that stepped up there. But we'll finish this off. Malachi Champion, one who there's going to be natural interest around, obviously an AFL Academy member, yep, and a really energetic small forward. How did he go?
He was pretty good. He just always creates that natural burst and that energy inside 50 that you're always on the edge of your seats when he's around it. I think he kicked 2-2 in the end, and he probably should have had 4 goals straight, to be honest. The 2 points he missed were definitely kickable, and I would say they were crucial moments. Some of his set shots where it could have got WA a bit further ahead, or there were just those were moments I'm sure he'd like back. But yeah, yep, it was a typical, just created the energy inside 50. It was evasive. He's so low to the ground. He's hard to tackle, and he sees an opponent in front of him and he doesn't panic, but kicked 2 really nice goals in the end. And his composure on the outside as well, I thought was really nice when he did move up the ground. So it was a decent start, but I think he's got like that 3 or 4 goal game in him. And he's one of those players you feel without him, WA lose by more. So yep, that's yep, the impact he does have.
Yep. No, absolutely. Anyone else from a WA perspective, just quickly? I know you're pretty high on Luke Urquhart.
Yeah, he was their best, I thought. Just really tough, clean by hands around the contest and strong hands, kicked a really good goal from 50 metres out, was providing consistent run. And yeah, he was always wanted to have the ball in his hands. You felt that with his energy. He yep, was always willing them on. Charlie Banfield, brother of Bailey Banfield from the Freo Dockers. Yep. Oh, I thought he was quite nice. Really smart ball user. Like, his kicks were really well executed. Shots at goal. He set up shots at goal through his kicking and movement through the middle of the ground. And Austin van der Struth, I thought, was really mm-hmm, nice as well. Composed through the middle with his kicking when WA needed him. But
yep,
yeah, there's not heaps of talent, I'll be honest, on the board with WA this year. It's definitely a smaller talent pool compared to recent years, but there's still players standing up and interested to see who builds on a good champs. But Allies go 1-1, SA are 1-0. This weekend, Vic Metro and Allies and Vic Country SA. So very interested to see how they go, and check out our Instagram for my 5-4-3-2-1. Leo Lombard leads the tally.
Yep.
With 10 votes, 2 perfect games. Hard to see him getting beaten, to be honest. Mm. It's hard to see who takes votes off him. But let's go to Talent League now. I'll let you kick off. We'll start with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
You pick the game. Who do you want to start off with?
Well, we'll start with Bendigo and Gippy. Gippy getting the job done by 4 points at La Trobe University in Bundoora on Sunday. It was a very cold day, and the storyline to come out of this one was Noah Christie, a kid from Mafra in East Gippsland, stood up and kicked 4 goals, a top ager that a lot of people probably aren't all that aware of. He has kicked bags at times this season. I think he kicked 3-3 against Dandenong earlier in the season, which gave an insight into his class, but it was probably just a glimpse, whereas this was a more well-rounded day. He took big marks. He kicked goals from the boundary line. He was clean crumbing. He outstrengthed opponents. He was really good, and he's come from a long way back. So last year, he was a fringe player for Xavier College. He wasn't even necessarily a first-choice starter in their best 22, and that's in an APS competition. To now come and dominate a Talent League game the way he has was a real testament to the work he's put in over preseason, and also some work at Mafra from all reports as well, which seasoned bodies in senior footy, no doubt that would have held him in good stead.
I'll take you to the other end of the ground, and James Barrett, know you've loved the way he's gone about it, and I guess goal efficiency has been his issue. How did he perform this time?
Yeah, so three straight this one. But as you know, it was his opponent that I was really big on this week. Jai Esler kept him to just the three shots on goal. And although he did contribute, yeah, the three goals, when you consider the fact he's averaging 6.5 shots per game, to keep him to just three shots, one of those from a 50-metre penalty, so very hard for Jai Esler to stop that, and one of those with 5 seconds to go in the game when the result's already sealed. So really, he was excellent on him. And it's his second match back from injury, Jai Esler, a hamstring injury, which kept him out of the first part of the season. He's come back as a 19-year-old. And yeah, as a key defender, he's showing a lot. His ability to match James Barrett for aggression, to keep him accountable as well, was really, really impressive. Worked him up the ground. And there were a few times where the ball did come into him one-on-one and he was able to spoil him. And we know how good a contested mark James Barrett is. Probably the best that Vic Country has got. So for Jai Esler to match him was really impressive. Just a couple of others I want to touch on from a Gippsland perspective before we move on to the Pioneers. Thought Jesse Craven in the midfield played a really important role. Max Stobey caught the eye with some clearances. Harry Canning, some really important efforts in defence as well. And Asher Easton continues his solid form. Would love a breakout game from him at some point.
From a Pies perspective, Connor Evans is one that has had a really nice start to the season and built a really nice resume of footy to start the season. He's really reliable. It's that accountability that stands out with him, and he's a great ball user. How'd he go?
Yeah, his aerial stuff was what really stood out for me on the day. I think that's what always stands out to me. At least 4 intercept marks. I know he was credited with the 7 marks, a few more intercept possessions on top of that. So positions himself really well behind the footy, guards dangerous territory. And yeah, his ball use, I've seen it be pretty good. I've seen it be, you know, not so good. But I thought on the day it was serviceable, and it did the job. But certainly what caught the eye was what he was able to do overhead. And yeah, those intercept marks were really impressive. I saw it a lot in the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season, maybe a little bit quieter in the last couple of weeks, but back to his best on Sunday.
Lachie Hogan, I know you rated his game pretty highly. What was it about it that had him so high for you?
Yeah, 31 disposals, and we know he does take the kickouts, so that number does always get accentuated a little bit. We know what he can do when he gets the ball. We know he's always a really good user and a good decision maker. Something he added to the game that I'm not used to seeing from him, though, where there are a few intercept marks there. So he was aerially potent as well. And for someone of his size, I thought that was really nice to see.
Run me through the other Pios boys that you were pretty impressed with. Should have mentioned they lost by 4 points. Kippy got up by 4 points.
Yeah. Ollie Morris, I thought he was – I didn't put him, I don't think, in my 5-4-3-2-1 that's gone up on
– No, he got it.
He did get in. Okay, good, because he deserved it, because he was silky, he was quick, he was composed, he was efficient. Every time he had the ball, I really noticed him. So he's going to be a really nice player, whatever level he does end up playing next year. I always enjoy watching him, and the moments he does have are really eye-catching. Zayden Lockwood came into it in the second half after missing last week with COVID. Archer Day-Wicks had some strong moments, was really energetic at the start of the fourth quarter when Bendigo looked to mount a comeback. Toby Trevallio was typically reliable down back as well, and Sean Watson backed up last week's strong game.
Move now to Western Northern, this one I watch, and yeah, it was pretty, it kind of seemed like it was going to be a bit of a stinker to start. Like, Northern got out to a 20-0 lead. I think it could have been 25-0, and Western, yeah, they came right back into it, and fair play. They turned it on that second half, and they got up by 3 points in a pretty cracking finish. I know you watched the back end of it as well, and it was a nice game. But I think the story was Jack Girardi, and I apologize. I call him Jake in the graphic I put on Instagram, because he does seem like a Jake Girardi, but he's a Jack Girardi. Either way, kick 6 on the day, and yeah, that's kind of been the story of his year. He's just so reliable, and he'll find goals out of nothing. I mean, a couple goals were out the back, but I think that just speaks to his smarts in general. He just knows how to get in the right spots and find himself on the end of an easy goal if it's an easy goal. But no, there were some big kicks as well. A really nice snap in from the boundary for his 5th goal. A good set shot to get them back in the lead late in the final quarter. Well, those last two goals were a product of Luca Grego, who, yeah, probably had a slower start, wasn't able to get into it purely because of Northern's dominance, and he was pushed down to half back where he was, you know, that relief out of D50, and he was good there. And there was no complaints there, but it was his work through the corridor in that last quarter that was so impactful. His run and carry, and laced out Girardi twice in that last quarter, and those two goals put them in front, and it was just really impactful moments that I liked from him. And yeah, I thought that was a different element where he was just able to show his offensive capability to to stay composed, to lower his eyes.
Certainly. One of those was a really elite sidestep as well. It's not what you associate with Luca Grego. You think of him as that really courageous ball winner in the contest. So for him to have those really important moments was good to see. And Jack Girardi, as you touch on, not only has he had the six-goal haul now, but it feels like every time he plays, he's getting that three or four shots on goal. Yeah. I know last time I watched him against GWV in the wet, I thought he was outstanding as a small forward. So, yeah, for him to produce this consistently is, you know, you can only do what you can do, and he's doing everything he can to have people keep an eye on him. From a Northern Knights perspective, who were the players that took your eye?
Yeah, well, it was a weird one for Northern, and without Zach Johnson, there was definitely, you did feel that loss in the midfield. They always felt like they needed that extra bit of class. It was up forward that I thought the three tall blondes pretty much did their work, and that is in Gab Stumpf, Tom Sims, and Liam Farrar had a bit of it as well. But I'll start with Gab Stumpf, who just could not kick a goal to start. Like, got in the right spots, had his shots on goal. I think one went wide and two just didn't make the distance, like, from snap. So he was just always that one goal away from really impacting the game.
Yep.
Then he did get that goal in the third quarter from a 50-meter penalty, kicked another as well straight after, took a really good grab late. And I thought, although it probably doesn't reflect on the stat sheet, productive on his end, and not everything went well, but I think it's still a good confidence-building game.
Yeah,
moving into Metro Champs, if he's to get selected in the first game. Tom Sims, I feel like the stats didn't reflect how well he did. And it's just that consistent presenting inside 50 where when he's going at it, you reckon he's going to take that mark.
Yep.
And he was able to get a few good contested marks inside 50. I thought his tackle pressure was terrific as well. Only was able to kick one goal, but showed a bit of a different element with his pressure acts inside 50. So that was probably the main for Northern, along with Lucas McInerney, who I thought was pretty good.
Yep.
But one more Western player I just want to touch on, Lucas Impey.
Yeah.
Just got to touch on him before we move on.
Yep.
Yeah, he was imposing in the ruck, really tough, was just at it all day. And down the line, he was presenting as a really good marking option, providing pressure around the contest, a really good ruck performance.
Yeah, so for those who are unaware, he's got a really high-level basketball background. He's come back as a 19-year-old this year for development and is now in calculations for Vic Metro as a result of Ilero Smith getting drafted. They don't have a recognised ruck in the squad now. He was the next in line, you sensed from things you heard. So hopefully for his sake he does get added, because his development in the last month or so has been really stark. And yeah, his aggression and ability to get involved around the ground as well as winning hitouts to advantage has been really impressive. I'll move on to the Oakley versus Calder game. I watched a little bit of this one, predominantly the first half, and Jagger Smith really turned it on. It felt like the Jagger Smith show. 40 touches he finished with, and I think I texted you saying he finished with 40, but I think I actually wanted to say he was going to back up 50. In the end, I didn't say that. I don't know if he was quieter in the second half, but it felt like he was involved in everything in the first half. Just so smart and smooth, and another performance that just adds to his resume. From a Oakley perspective, I guess if there are other players I was going to touch on, Kobe Askew, I thought up forward was really dangerous from limited opportunities. Oakley got some opportunities in the last quarter, but in the first half it was really dry. But when it did go up there, he was dangerous and showed his sharp step. Although he only finished with one or two goals, he had several shots that either were sprayed wide and went out on the full or went through for behinds. Lucas Tovey took some nice marks, and Ollie Barter spent some time on Isaac Kakko, kept him goalless, although Kakko did have four shots on goal. But Barter was also able to get involved really well on offense. From a Calder point of view, I thought Noah Scott was their clear best on ground. He was really good sweeping across halfback. So good to see him back after an injury interrupted start to the season. He looks like he's starting to get some continuity with his footy. Hussein Al Ashkar, who I know you've been a fan of, applied really good pressure and kicked some goals in the forward line. Jaden Ewan through the midfield did some nice things, and Damon Hollow as well.
Move now to Murray and Geelong, and Murray got the job done 8-15-63 to Geelong's 5-4-34, which different result to what we saw a couple months back where Geelong absolutely slaughtered them in Ballarat. But
with schoolboys, admittedly, Geelong.
Yeah, but still, it was a big result. But Murray got them one back. Matt Whitlock, Joe Berry and Jack Whitlock all kicked two goals, so good to see them performing. And Will McCarthy as well finished with 24 disposals in the end, so a big performance from him.
And, yeah, and Alex Swinnerton was down back again and, yeah, had another solid outing, which was good to see.
Lockie Jakes from the Falcons, 28 touches, good to see, 4 tackles. And he's been pretty consistent all year, 7 rebound 50, so like the way he's gone about it. Tassie and Sandy now, we don't know what the hell happened here, honestly. If you're looking at the score, you're wondering what's happened here. That 48 has won you a game.
Yeah, not something you see every day of the week.
And Sandy have scored 25 points. But Tassie won 48 to 25.
I just watched just 15 minutes of this once you told me that that was a scoreline. I was in my car at the car park somewhere. But, I just watched 15 minutes of this and it was very windy. So that affected skills. Yes. And, if you watch the Tassie's last shot on goal, you'll get a really good sense of how windy it was. They had a shot on goal from 35 out and it fell 10 metres short. So that's how windy it was.
Yep.
So clearly very swirly and that affected skills. Jasper Hay and Ollie Dean, obviously really highly regarded rucks, got the opportunity to go against Brody Finlay, who's a more physically developed player and had some nice moments from what I watched. And Jet Hayata finished with a nice stats line on the wing as well, used his speed well. So, that's that game. But, probably one that you put in the rearview mirror as quickly as you can if you're one of those two teams. Dandenong and GWV fought out a really good contest. Toby Cinema kicked the winning goals at Devon Meadows local. A bottom major who played for Vic Country last year, a winger who's shown some really nice signs and one to certainly keep an eye on because he moves really silkily and he's got that ability to finish. We saw it, obviously, with his ability to kick the winning goal, but he's kicking efficiency and polish is generally one of his strengths and his running capacity as well. He's really accustomed to that wing role now. But their best on ground was Jordan Doherty, I thought. Cooper Hines possibly stiff, a victim of his own benchmark that he sets for himself. But Jordan Doherty just provided a target up the line all day and, was taking contested marks, was getting involved in general play. I know when we watched the Young Guns, we both sort of noted Jordan Doherty's ability to be really poised when the ball did hit the deck and really skillful for a big man. So for someone that's returned as a 19-year-old, he's developed really well and is someone that's really benefited from the extra year in the system. So, it's really good to see him producing and I thought he was the standout. Charlie Orchard down back was really competitive, had some big moments late when the GWV Rebels looked to even up the scores and Kane Hurst continues his strong form. From a GWV perspective, Jonty Fall returns. That's the storyline of this one. 5 goals. He kicked the first goal of the day, kicked some goals in the second half, which were really crucial, kicked some goals from set shots, kicked one from the boundary line, which was spectacular, and used his size really well. I think it was a real reminder to people selecting the first Vic Country team that he should well and truly be in it because his ability to take contested marks and physically impose himself on a contest is, I don't want to say second to none because James Barrett exists, but second to very few.
He's got best hands in the in the competition.
Very, very arguably. And Charlie McKinnon, got to give a shout out to him. If Jonty Fall and Charlie McKinnon, you could basically raffle who you give best on ground to. Charlie McKinnon finished with 3 goals from his 9 shots, probably a little bit disappointing. But, his ability to win one-on-ones at 189 centimetres is a bottom major, really impressive. Archie Caldo won plenty of it in the midfield. Mitch Lloyd strong down back and Ollie Hannaford and Jacko continued their strong form.
Ladder, and then we're just going to tip the one game this weekend, but Tassie now lead the competition with 24 points. Geelong, Murray, Calder, Gippy, Eastern on 20, Sandy, Western, Northern, Bendigo on 16, Dandy on 14, Rebels and Oakley with the one win. So Calder now lead the Metro Conference. Tassie now lead the Country Conference. Sandy and Oakley is this Friday night at RSCA. We'll both be down at this. So this is a annual Kin's birthday eve. Game that they like to play at Moorabbin. Who have you got?
Yeah, so with schoolboys back, that's why they play on this weekend. So the schoolboys get an extra game of talent league. I still think Sandy will be slightly too deep for the Chargers.
I would agree. Move to the girls now. I'll let you start again. Who do you want to pick for the first game?
Yeah, I'll start with Bendigo and Gippy again. And Gippy ultimately were able to outclass Bendigo. They were able to outlast them as well. The first quarter, very scrappy. Gippy got a goal right on the siren, and then from there, Gippy were clearly the better team. Ash Centra, on her 18th birthday, produced another mind-boggling performance, racked up heaps of the footy, 1.5 and a couple of missed shots as well, so that was the one element of her game she would have wished she was able to polish, because that would have made it a perfect day, really. Another outstanding performance from her. Some other Gippsland girls just to run through. I thought Lily Layton is one who's developing really nicely. Her ability to shrug off contact and step through traffic is really impressive. Ava Dej, a double bottom major, her goal sense was really impressive on the day. She's so strong and she can take a mark, and she's really crafty as well. I thought it was a real breakout performance from her, and that's certainly what people around Gippsland were saying as well. She had the 5 shots on goal. Beck Fitzpatrick read the play really well. Maya Cristani, really impressive in the ruck. Her development is a real testament to the program, because she's come from a long way back and is developing really quickly. Alice Stoddart, you know what you're going to get from her. Same can be said for Grace Dillo and Jazz Souden, and Abby Hobson was good with 3 goals as well.
Good to hear from a Bendigo perspective. I guess Lou Paint is always at the top of that list.
Lou Paint, obviously, yes, her strength, smarts and class were on show again. But some others just worth touching on. I thought Lola Madu was really good. Only finished with 6 disposals, but some of her defensive efforts were really important when Gippy were coming hard. She was on the last line and having to defend some forward thrusts and did so really well. Finished with some really important marks where you sort of sensed if it got to ground level, she was outnumbered. There was probably going to be a goal scored. And it's the second week in a row I've watched Bendigo, and again, she was quite strong. So I really do want to give her a good shout out. I like what she produces. Lexi Greger kicked both of their goals and her marking was really good as well. Liv Lacey and Jamaica Douglas also had some moments.
Oakley got the job done against Geelong, 54-24. And look, if it wasn't for a poor start from Geelong, they were down 32-7 at quarter time, but then they only lost the last 3 quarters 22-17. So shows they can match it. And yep, Oakley just do have that extra bit of class, as we've seen all season. Emma McDonald finished with 3 goals. Chloe Bone with 28 touches. Sarah Howley led the stats for Geelong with 27 touches. Abby Vicino a goal and 25 touches for Oakley. One that I wish we got to watch, but, you know, there's so much footy at the moment. But, yeah, good to see Geelong. They're competitive.
Yeah, punching above their weight. Yeah,
very certainly. Good to see that. I'll move
one to one that wasn't good to see was Murray's girls going down to the Northern Territory Academy, because I thought they showed a lot of promise, Murray, against Calder, and I thought they were really due for that breakout win. It was that nearly performance against Calder. Just couldn't quite do it for 4 quarters. But unfortunately, NT won 3-2, 20-0, 6-6. So really demoralizing performance, unfortunately, for Murray, and you know, your hearts go out to them. You'd love to see them get on the board for the amount of effort they put in. But some of the girls were producing really well, like Sophia Green, obviously an under-16s All-Australian. We talked about her class last week, and go to our video and a post on our channel about some of these girls, because they do have a lot of class and skill. Unfortunately, just weren't able to show it on the day. Holly Egan, Constance Dodd, Rose Bell, a few others as well, Magella Day.
Look, there's no guarantee they won't win a game for the rest of the
year. No, no, and I didn't say that. But
that's a good opportunity, probably missed, but you never know. I mean, they got one against Bendigo that we didn't predict, so there could be another opportunity. Hopefully there is for Murray. Tassie got up 44-13 against Sandy, and they kept Sandy scoreless up until 3-quarter time, which is quite impressive. Yeah. And they continue to hold down the fortress in Tasmania. Harriet Binley, 2 goals and 19 touches. Lucy Thompson finished with 19 disposals, a goal and a big 15 tackles. 15 tackles is ridiculous.
She's so powerful, yeah. Yeah,
really shows her class in the Pressure Act department. Ava Reid finished with 2 goals as well.
And if you're going to talk about tackles in the Pressure Act department, then we have to talk about Nikita Harris from the Dandenong Stingrays. They got up against the GWV Rebels. A really scrappy start to this one. It was 10 or 11 minutes into the second quarter before the first goal was even kicked. So, yeah, really scrappy. But Dandenong were eventually able to outclass GWV. Nikita Harris finished with 22 tackles. And I think that speaks to how stoppage heavy this game was, but also how much of a tackling machine she is. So she's an aerobic beast and is also really willing to get her hands dirty. She's shown that this season, but obviously that went up a level on the weekend. Ruby Gertz was good off halfback from what I watched. I watched a little bit of this game. Nalu Brothwell up forward leading up at the ball carrier was quite strong as well. From a GWV perspective, it was Jovi Skews-Clinton, who was really prominent, an under-16s Vic Country member. And every time I've watched GWV, she's really taken my eye as someone who's just got a little bit more class and efficiency, and she did it again on the weekend. Claire Marnie's marking is something that always takes your eye, and the same can be said for Gemma Reynolds' cleanliness.
Nikita Harris, looking at it now, she's second in the competition for tackles. on average, but she leads the competition in total tackles for the season. On average, she's behind Sarah Pousty. So pretty good company there. But certainly, the girls' ladder, there's no tips this week because the girls' metro and country trials are this weekend, which we don't have teams for, unfortunately, as we record on a Monday night. But we will cover that next week in a very, very full episode next week. But for the ladder, Oakley lead by a game. Gippy move into second, which is terrific to see after...
And a testament to the growth of the program.
Eastern, Tassie, Dandy all joined Gippy on 20 points. Northern John 16. Sandy Bendigo 12. Rebels 8. Western Calder with a win. And Murray, unfortunately, still looking for their first win. Oakley lead Metro and Gippy now lead Country.
We're going to do something a little bit different now, and we're going to build our prototype player. So a little segment that we're going to do here where we're going to go through defenders and nine aspects that make, I guess, your perfect defender. Now, this is combining, you know, some small defender skills with some tall defender skills. So theoretically, it's probably not possible to have all of this in your game. But for a bit of fun, all the defenders in the talent league to pick from, you have to pick one for each of the categories that we read out. We've each done this independently of each other. We've got no idea who each other's picked. So we've done it for nine categories for defenders, nine categories for midfielders, and nine categories for forwards. We'll start with defenders, if you like.
Sure.
And we'll start with one-on-one. So if who in the competition do you want in a one-on-one contest in defence? I've gone with Kane Hurst from the Dandenong Stingrays. I've loved what I've seen from him. He rarely loses a one-on-one, pound for pound, very hard to beat.
Adrian Cole is mine as a one-on-one. Taking away the last game I watched of him, where it probably didn't show as much, but he's reliable. He'll at least bring the ball to ground at the very least if you're not taking a mark. So, yeah, he's my one-on-one.
Need to be able to set up the game if you're going to be a defender these days, particularly a halfback. So kicking's really important. Who from the defence in the CTL is your kicker?
Defence is questionable here, but Lachie Hogan, assuming he plays on the halfback.
That's a very fair answer.
So okay. There's some players that you could justify that, well, I think only two, to be honest. But, yeah, Lachie Hogan.
No, I think that's fair. I've gone Tom Wenzel, very effective for Oakley, and that's his point of difference that got him into the program and got him a trial for Vic Metro. Yep. Run and carry.
Toby Trevaglia.
Yep, same. Think that was pretty easy.
I actually completely forgot about him. It was at the last second. I was like, why is he not there? So, yes, he gets
him. Certainly that's what he's known for. That's his bread and butter. Intercepting.
Luke Traynor.
Same. Yep. I think that was an easy one. Athleticism.
I've got Lachie Jakes.
Okay.
Because I don't think he's... I can understand that. He doesn't show it... not that he doesn't show it enough. I just don't think the opportunity is there enough for him to show how athletically capable he is. Like, we saw it when we went out to film with these Falcons boys. He can jump. Like, he's...
He can jump.
He can jump.
Someone a little bit taller and a little bit of a different build, but certainly the athleticism really important in the way he plays his footy is Lachie MacArthur with his agility and ability to step. I've gone with strength.
Had a hard time with Smile. I've got Matt Whitlock whenever he's been playing up forward recently, but let's assume he plays his natural position. He's tough, he's built. He's got a pretty good built body for his age and tough to beat.
He certainly developed across preseason, didn't he? He was quite skinny last year. I've gone Ollie Hannaford from the GWV Rebels. Composure.
Harry O'Farrell. I think when the ball goes to ground, there's no better player to have the ball in the hands with, just assesses it really well and is calm.
Yeah, not a bad answer. I've gone with Luke Traynor. We have said we can double up.
I don't have a double up. That was my goal, so I don't have a double up.
This is my only double up. Okay. So Luke Traynor, I think what I saw in the Academy game, very hard to argue for me. Reading the play, which defender reads the play the best?
Xavier Lindsay, but that's halfback Xavier Lindsay from the under 17 grand final game.
Absolutely fair. I've gone with Mitch Lloyd. I think he reads the cues of the kicker really well, positions himself in the dangerous territory. And last one, from a defensive point of view, who's the best when it comes to toughness?
I've got Zayden Lockwood as my answer. I've quite grown to the way he plays, and
that's a really good answer. Yeah,
just a bit of edge about him that he'll just take on whatever comes at him.
Very skinny, but that doesn't daunt him. He's happy to go against the bigger body. So I like that answer. I've gone with Luke Quainer. He body spoils and is really willing to put his body on the line. So that's from a defensive point of view. Now we'll move to the midfield. Who in the midfield is the best kick in this pool, do you think?
I've got Zach Johnson. I have to have him in there. He's just neat. I feel like his general movement is just neat. And from a defensive standpoint, they want to get things right, and he gets things right.
I've gone with Jagger Smith, and I think what I saw on the weekend reinforced that decision-making in the midfield.
This is the one I found the hardest because midfielders are never generally the best decision makers because they're so focused on just getting it out and moving it, and they're typically the ones to make the most mistakes out of anyone on the field. But I think decision making in my head is who seizes the moments the best in crucial parts of the game. I've got Levi Ashcroft.
I've gone just Levi has Ashcroft those as moments. Well. Yep. I've gone Levi Ashcroft. I think his ability to understand where teammates are. I mean, I'm not going to compare him to Nick Daicos, but you saw it on Friday night. Yep. Nick Daicos' ability to release teammates against the Western Bulldogs was really good. And I feel like he has that same understanding of the game and could grow into a similar type of player. That's a really weird comparison, and they're very different players, but yeah, the smarts and decision making there. Strength in the midfield, there can surely only be one answer here, can't there?
No, because I know what this... Well, Josh Smiley.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was the other player that could fall into this category, but I've got him later on. Yeah, Josh Smiley.
Were you thinking Sam Lawlor, were you?
No.
Okay.
But I got to move to tackling, and I had Cody Anderson.
I had Cody Anderson. Which was my best
that's
tackler.
Why I thought so, you could have said strength there. But he's my
so
tackler.
Strength and power, Josh Smiley. Tackling is another category. I'd say, Cody Anderson. I know some Dandenong Stingrays boys would think I should say Harry Doughton, and he is a very good tackler as well, but Cody Anderson's a class above. Goal scoring from a midfield point of view?
Christian Moraes.
Yep, that's the same as me. I think that's his point of difference. Cleanliness in the midfield?
Cleanliness. I don't have cleanliness on my list.
Don't have cleanliness.
No, you can give your answer though.
Sam Lawlor.
Yeah, back that.
Probably be a pretty similar answer, I would have thought. Our speed?
Damon Hollow.
Yeah, that's a really good answer.
Yeah, it was out there. I was like, yeah, you know what? He's just,
He didn't even cross my mind. I think if he did, definitely. Because his acceleration over the first three or four steps is outstanding. Saw it on the weekend against Oakley. But I've gone with Zach Johnson. If you're talking lateral movement, I think his ability to get inside and outside to space is really good. And Finno Sullivan, I think that is something that can fly under the radar. And he is probably flying under the radar at the moment as a result of his injury. So I want to give him a shout out.
Yep.
Smarts.
I have Taj Hodden. Because execution probably lets him down. It has let him down at times, but he always finds a just some way to make the footy move in terrific ways, which is why I'd have his smarts up there, even though the execution can let him down at times.
I've gone Jagger. I forgot that I had another double up, but there you go, another double up. Yes. And I think that's pretty hard to argue with. And endurance.
Finno Sullivan.
Yeah.
That's my
I've gone a teammate of his, Pat Reshko, which... Yeah, I think both are very apt answers there. And we'll move to forwards. Contested marking.
Jobe Shanahan.
You've gone Jobe Shanahan over James Barrett. Wow. I don't think of Jobe Shanahan as a contested marker. I think of him more as
you can rely on him
still. Overhead marker, which is slightly different. But
Whereas
James Barrett is your pack-crushing, big-bodied, aggressive,
old school. I haven't watched as much James Barrett as you have, to be honest. That's why I have him, but I'll tell you anyways.
I'm interested where you do have him. Scoreboard impact.
James Barrett. But this sounds stupid, right? He's had 36 shots on goal.
Yeah.
Yes, it's...
best in the competition by a fair margin, you'd suggest. And you say 36 shots on goal. He's kicked some out on the floor as well. So you have more than that if you've just added goals.
So in technicality, he does have scoreboard impact.
In the
right way, he still needs to improve on, but he has scoreboard impact. He's always on it.
I've gone Lenny Douglas because, for Tassie.
And he's efficient as well.
Yeah, for Tassie, he certainly makes the most of his opportunities and, explosive. And you always know he's going to kick a couple of goals. Endurance.
Josh Dolan.
Yeah, he can get high up the ground. That's a fair answer. I've gone Jack Ryan as that high half forward who can get high. So I think we've gone similar types of players there. Crumming?
I don't have Crumming either, but I'll say... actually, no, because both are in my thin still. I'm not going to say who I would have said. Who would you have there?
Isaac Kakko.
Okay, well, that was... Yeah, he was one of two I would have said there.
Leading patterns.
Josh Murphy.
Jobe Shanahan.
Really, I would... If you want someone to lead at me, I'm picking Josh Murphy.
He probably gets separation, doesn't he? It's a good answer. Yeah, speed.
Xavier Iversich.
I've gone Joe Berry. He's one that's really grown this year. Yep. Athleticism.
Tom Sims, but this is one
that's
where...
That's interesting, because he's a big...
Yeah, this is one where I was like, I'd say athleticism in his ability to get up in a pack, and he's reliable where he moves up, he's hard to stop. He's not the most athletic tall, that's not what he's known for, but I felt like I had to include him, and that was probably the closest I could associate him with any of those categories.
I've gone Taj Houghton.
Which I put him in the mid. I'll put him in the mid. He's played more time in the mid, but yet again, I put Xavier Lindsay at halfback. But anyways.
Inside 50 kicking?
Lenny Douglas. Efficient. Just efficiency. Actually, I should have asked you, did you mean kicking when they are inside 50 or kicking?
Kicking inside 50, yeah.
Okay.
Xavier Lindsay, I've gone. You want to be leading out to Xavier Lindsay, I feel like. So, yes. Yeah, he's really efficient. Kraft.
No, I don't have that. Oh, no, I do have that one. Joe Berry.
I've gone a tie between Isaac Kacko and Lenny Douglas. So, clearly I did have more double ups than I remembered putting. I really thought I only had one double up. Was there any other categories? Pressure. Is that a category?
Pressure, yeah. Isaac Kacko. But he could have gone into speed as well, or forward Kraft. He's one that. Pressure, he's there. He's there with it.
Yeah, his pressure has really lifted this year. There's no doubt about it. I told you to have pressure as a category, and I don't even have a pressure forward myself, so that's something I might have to think about.
Maybe that says there needs to be a better pressure forward, eh?
Yeah. Who applies pressure? Yeah, I don't want to think about it and hold up the podcast, but yeah.
That was fun. That was good. We are going to do that again with the girls in a couple of weeks once we see kind of the equal amount of games with the girls and
obviously the trials boys this week as well. More games than the girls, yeah.
But that, check out our socials. We're going to have a good graphic on that as you think about a pressure forward, and we might be waiting until next week when we get the answer. But big episode.
Harry Doughton, definitely, because he plays in the midfield. Yes, he plays up forward, but that's his bread and butter.
There we go. Next week, massive episode. I don't know if we're going to get this all in one episode, but it might be split across two. The most likely split we will probably have is in one episode we will go over Sandy Oakley and the two boys' champs games, and then in the other episode the girls' Metro Country Trials and the under-16 Metro and Country game which takes place this week. So a whole heap to go over. Very exciting. Thank you all for watching. Hope you enjoyed. Check out our socials for more, and we will see you in the next episode.